If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by John Wynn Miller, author of the new novel, The Hunt for the Peggy Sea, a World War II maritime novel. Publishers Weekly wrote about the novel, diving into an intriguing plot with complex characters and urgent human stakes. This maritime World War II thriller from Miller immediately captivates. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Appreciate you having me.
If someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, The Hunt for Peggy Sea, how would you describe the novel?
Well, it's an action adventure, but it's about an American fugitive who rescues a Jewish family from Nazi-occupied Amsterdam before America entered the war. And that really pisses off his crew of misfits who didn't know he was going to do that. And it leads to a chase by a brutal U-boat captain bent on revenge. So it's, although I often describe it, it's really a love story. So when I'm pitching it for like Hollywood, I say it's like Casablanca meets Das Boot.
Do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing the novel?
It's very bizarre. You may not believe it, but it's true. years ago, I was watching a really bad action-adventure movie with my daughter, Allison, my wife, Margot, and I kept saying, I know I can write a better screenplay than that. I just know it. I was a journalist at the time. So that night, I went to bed and I had a dream. And then when I woke up, I knew the first scene and the last scene and the name of the ship. And that's all. I knew the Peggy Sea. I knew how it began. I knew how it ended. And so then I had to spend years trying to figure out how to write about something I know absolutely nothing about. You know, they always say, write what you know about. Well, I wrote what I had to research. Because I'd never been on a U-boat, never been on a tramp steamer, hadn't been to most of the places I wrote about. I'm not Jewish, although I have Ashkenazi blood and relatives. So I had to learn all of those things. And I turned it into a screenplay, which I actually got some meetings in Hollywood, no sales. And then when COVID hit, I decided, well, you know, I've always wanted to write a novel. Maybe I'll turn that screenplay into a novel. So that's how it happened.
You mentioned having to do all of this research. So what kind of research did you do for the novel?
Just tons. There, fortunately, in the internet age, it is easy to get access to a lot of books that I can do keyword searches of, so I don't have to read all of them, but I can find the parts I need. And you can take pretty extensive notes that you can put on your computer and then also search for them. So I did books. I did documentaries, not movies. I didn't watch Das Boot again. I had watched it many, many years ago because I was afraid of repeating mistakes in movies. And there are always a lot of them. And so I found diaries or memoirs and biographies by and about U-boat captains, about merchant marines during the war. There are a couple of websites that are just astounding. One of them is called uboat.net. And on it, you can find almost everything you could hope for about all the U-boats during the war. Who commanded them, where they were, on what day, what ships they sank. I found another site called uboataces.com where I could read the war diaries of all the U-boat captains, their daily logs of what they did, what the weather was, what the moon was. And there were also, there are a number of audio histories, oral histories, particularly on the Imperial War Museum's website. So I was able to do a pretty extensive, and I was really looking for those little details that you wouldn't normally get, like what's it smell like on a U-boat? What did they eat? How cold was it? You know, what? How did they go for months on end without a shower or any bathing? So it that was really the research, and it was a lot of fun doing the research. And of course, the problem is that when you're doing the research or having fun and you start going down rabbit holes and you just keep finding another thing. So, wow, I didn't know that. Oh my gosh. Let me, I got it. Well, where did that come from? I got to figure out a way to get that in the novel. That's just, so that's, and I'd already read a ton of World War II history over the years, but I didn't want to write about something that everyone else had written about. So there are a lot of surprises and a lot of accurate history and technology that most readers would not be familiar with.
Sometimes people take for granted the whole idea of a submarine. I don't know. I've long been fascinated with World War II submarines. I mean, the idea of, like, you know, that many people, you know, getting into a metal tube and being under the water for that long, it's just, it's kind of mind-blowing when you sit back and think about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, you've got 45 people in this tiny tube, and it's maybe the aisle in the middle is maybe 3 feet wide, and there's no place to really sleep. They do hot bunking, so that means you're in the bunk for 12 hours or you're on duty for 12 hours. You're sharing a bed. There's no place to wash. There are two toilets. One of them, though, at the beginning of the voyage, is crammed with food, so you can't use that. And if you go underneath the water, below periscope depth, basically 14 meters, you can't use the one toilet because you can't flush it because of the water pressure. So you got to use buckets, which are in the engine room, which is boiling hot. And you can just imagine the wonders of the aroma of all these men haven't showered. They can't use the bathroom. They're wearing the same clothes they've been wearing for days. And to make it all worse is that they tried to cover it up a little bit and wash in a, they had what was kind of a soap and a deodorant, a perfume called Calabri that was sickly sweet smelling. And so that just made things worse. So, yeah.
Wow. So I know that you worked in journalism for many years. How was the shift to writing fiction and screenplays for you after, you know, writing journalism?
Very, very different. I could write quickly. I was with the AP, so I learned to write very fast and describing things. But it was just the facts. You know, it was what I could see, what the facts were. With screenplays I liken to haiku, because you can't describe what someone's thinking. You can only describe what the audience sees and hears. They can't spell it. They can't know what the interior monologue is. And you've got to keep your writing very short, very sparse. Dialogue is usually misleading, also very sparse. And so that was hard to learn how to do. I rewrote and rewrote that screenplay many times, and even I hired people to read it for me and critique it. And then when the novel came, I had the plot, I had the characters, but I had very little of the history, very little of the technology, and I didn't develop the characters that deeply in the screenplay. It was an action. So I had to go back and write the bios of all the main characters. Where are they from? Where did they grow up? What do they read? What do they do? What do they like to eat? what's their religion? And then I had to learn how to write descriptive sentences and paragraphs using all five senses and do it in a way that would be engaging and not cliche. Because every writer, regardless of medium, when you first start out, you're rediscovering all the cliches. And so you've got to learn not to use those and to write around them and how to construct interesting sentences and then interesting paragraphs that are visual and visceral, but not, again, cliche. And they got to have a lot of variety. You know, as any writer will tell you, it's not, can I write the greatest sentence in the history of the world? It's just, can I write the next sentence?
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I noticed that you were a semifinalist, or the novel was a semifinalist in the Clive Cussler Adventure Writers Competition. Can you tell us about that? Is that something that you submitted to, or your publisher submitted the book to?
I submitted the advanced reader's copy even before I'd finished the novel. And so that was quite a thrill to get that, because it's very much in line with Clive Cussler's, you know, adventure. I try to do it a little bit more in depth, and also I have a female lead who ends up being the hero. So that was a thrill. But then I've also, I just recently won a gold medal from the Military Writers Society of America, and a gold medal from the Titans Book Award. And you mentioned Publishers Weekly. Well, they gave me an editor's choice. So it's been getting really nice critical reviews and great reader reviews. I've got over 60 five-star reviews on Amazon. So that's I think I've pleased most of the critics and most of the readers. Not everybody likes it. It's not for everybody, but
sure.
It's a fun read. That I can tell.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
First, find your voice and write in your voice. My big mistake was I love certain writers like John Le Carre or Hemingway or Donna Tartt, and I tried to write like them, and I quickly discovered I'm not Faulkner. I can't write like that. It just sounds terrible. So I went back and started writing the way I knew how to write, first as a journalist, just getting the facts right, getting the details right, but then spending a lot of time polishing sentences and reading them out loud. A novel is kind of like poetry. You know, it's got to have a rhythm to it, and it's got to be surprising. It can't be all predictable. So that is the hardest thing, is to just don't be afraid to write in your own voice. Then go back maybe and read some books about all the cliches you've just discovered. I went back and read Saul Stein's Stein on Writing, and it was so frustrating because it was like, oh my God, I wasn't supposed to do that. Really? I can't. And then, I of course read Stephen King's On Writing, which was somewhat helpful, but really frustrating because he said, I was saying, well, if you can't write 2,000 words a day, you can't be a writer. And I said, what? I feel lucky if I get 200 words a day. And so it's okay to set quotas, but I write when I feel like writing. I have a sort of a pattern, but I don't put pressure on myself. And like Stephen King, he won't quit till he's got 2,000 words. I just can't imagine. You know, he'll have a whole novel done in a month, which I cannot do. And so, and then there's John Grisham. I've read where he says if you can't write a book a year, then you can't be a writer. And that he doesn't, his method is entirely different than mine. He spends the first 2 or 3 or 4 months just outlining the novel. And then he spends a couple of months writing it, and then a couple of months rewriting it. I don't outline. And Stephen King doesn't outline. In fact, he recommends against it. So you got to find what works for you, whether outlining or not. And don't be afraid to take criticism. I have a lot of people read the books that I write before they even get to the publisher to say, you know, your terminology is incorrect or your technology's off, or you really can't do that in this kind of a novel. You know, you can't get and do head jumping where you're going from one character's point of view to the other. Right. You got to sort of divide it out. And so that was a real learning experience. But people were so nice. And fellow authors were just really nice and helpful. So don't be afraid to ask for help.
So are you working on another novel now?
Strangely, when I turned in the final draft for The Hunt for the Peggy Sea, my publisher said, you know, you ought to just keep writing. I said, okay. I didn't really have any ideas. But so I just took the same characters, the ones that survive, the first book, and wrote the second book. It only took me 7 months, which stunned me. And my wife and other advanced readers tell me it's better than the first one. And so I finished that. I sold it to the publisher. It'll come out in October. It takes 18 months to get a book out, to get it published once they buy it. And then, so while I was waiting, I don't know where the idea came from, but I started on a third novel using the characters that had survived the first two. And chronologically, World War II, the first one ends, runs up to D-Day, Pearl Harbor. The second one runs up to mid-1943, and the third runs up to D-Day. Again, with the same characters, different situations. The first novel is almost all at sea. The second one is mainly at sea, and then the third one is very little at sea. And with each one, my female lead, Miriam Maduro, becomes a bigger part of the plot. And by the third novel, this is giving it away, she survives. By the third novel, she is the hero. She's the lead, and my other lead, Captain Jake Rogers, the captain of the tramp steamer who rescues her in the first book, he is a lesser character than she is. So it follows a big long-term arc for all of them.
What novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoy?
Wow. I typically read more biographies than histories. I mean, I love Eric Larson, his last one is The Sacred and the Vile or something like that. I can't remember the name.
Yep. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and he writes great stuff. I read John Le Carré for just the joy of the language. Now, his plots are a little confusing, and sometimes he loses me completely, but he can still write a better sentence than almost anybody I've read. My favorite historical novelist is Colleen McCullough, who wrote the Masters of Rome series. There's 7 books about ancient Rome, about the rise of Caesar and Augustus. I could read her over and over because her research is just spectacular, but her writing is wonderful. And so I read a lot of her. I've been trying to read. I spend so much time doing historical research that I have to struggle to find time to read for fun. And I typically read histories or biographies. Novels, I struggle with a lot of novels because I can't say, well, wait a minute, you can't do that. That's not right. Although I do go back and read, I keep notes on books that I've read where the language is just spectacular. Donna Tartt wrote The Secret History, which has the single best opening of any book I've ever read. And just throughout, the language that she uses to structure the, is just brilliant. Of course, it took her 10 years to write it, so it's not entirely fair.
Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novel, The Hunt for the Peggy Sea?
I have a website. It's my name, johnwinmiller.com, johnwinmiller.com. And on there you can read about me, read about my family, my famous daughter, who is an actress who's been on a bunch of TV shows, who's also one of the inspirations for this novel. You can sort of read my bio, how my time as a journalist. I was an investigative reporter. I was a Pulitzer finalist. I was a foreign correspondent. Was an editor and a publisher. Produced 4 movies, including one called Band of Robbers, which is probably, it is the best one. It was written and directed by my then son-in-law, Adam Nee, and his brother, Aaron Nee. It's about a modern retelling of the story of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer as adult petty criminals looking for that one big score. And it is spectacularly funny because it uses the language of Huck and Tom in the mouths of 30-year-old ne'er-do-wells. And it actually did very well. And the most important thing was Sandra Bullock saw it, loved it, and hired Adam and Aaron to write and direct her last movie, which was The Lost City. So I claim full credit for their success. And my daughter's, I claim full credit for hers.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking to John Wynn Miller, author of the new novel, The Hunt for the Peggy Sea, a World War II maritime novel. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And John, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you very much. As you say, it's available everywhere. Anywhere you buy books, it's also available on Audible, not with my voice, because have you heard my accent? No, I don't sound very German. So yes, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
Wonderful.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.